I'm Barbara Pettit, Head of Journal Publications at CFA Institute and Editor of the Financial Analyst Journal. And I'm here today with David Chambers, University Reader at Cambridge Judge Business School and Academic Director of the Newton Center for Endowment Asset Management. David, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And David is here today to talk about the article he co-authors with Elroy Dimson, Chairman of the Newton Center for Endowment Asset Management and Emeritus Professor at the London Business School, about Keynes. And what actually a lot of people know is Keynes is a very famous economist. But something that they don't necessarily know is that he is also a great investor, or he was a great investor. Now, David, tell us, what triggered the idea of looking at Keynes as an investor and in his investment experience? Could you share with us some of the key challenges you faced when you started this project?
Yes, certainly. I think there are a couple of things that gave me the idea to try and conduct some research on Keynes the investor. The first is that for anybody who's looked at his general theory of interest, employment, and money, the key chapter in that book, which is his magnum opus, this was the one that was published in 1936 that gave rise to Keynesianism, is the key chapter which deals with the stock market is chapter 12, which talks about animal spirits, long-term expectations, and the role of the stock market. And it's clear in there that here is someone who has a good understanding of the way stock markets worked. And so the question was, well, where does that come from? What was it that led him to have that understanding of the way the stock market worked? And the second element is that there's some excellent biographies out there on Keynes, not least of which is the three-volume work by Robert Skidelsky. And if you read those, there are stories interlaced in this biography of what Keynes did as an investor. So, for example, Skidelsky talked about the fact that Keynes, 12 times the size of his college endowment. He talked about the fact that a typical day for Keynes would be he'd wake up and after breakfast trade with his stockbroker from his bed. And then there's an apocryphal story about Keynes when he was at King's College asking one of the staff members to go and measure the dimensions of the chapel, of King's College Chapel, just in case he had to take delivery on one of his wheat derivative contracts. So these stories abounded, but it was crying out for some data to be found where we could really find out what he was doing. So that gives rise to your second question, which what the key challenges were in trying to do this. And the main thing was trying to find good data, and that required going into the archives of King's College and looking for portfolio holdings on a consistent basis over time, and also if possible for his security trades. We were able to do that for the college endowment, which he ran for 25 years. We also found some data on his personal investments, but by far the best records were kept on what he did for the college. And I think it's worth understanding that if we conduct this kind of research today, I mean, there's an awful lot of research that's done in the finance literature on mutual funds and institutional funds. In general, we do not have the detailed data on trades. The best we can do is find quarterly security holdings and infer trading from that. In this case with Keynes, we had his time-dated trades.
That's fantastic. Now, in broad terms, how would you characterize his investment philosophy and approach?
So I think the most important thing to say about his overall investment approach was that he was one of the very first people who was running money in an institutional context, by which I mean looking to invest portfolios across multiple asset classes. He was the very first investor to engage with equities and to realize that equities was the new asset class for investors in the 1920s. He, in part, he was building on a very important study that was done by Edgar Lawrence Smith, who was a Wall Street broker who wrote a very influential book, which was the first really clear metric study of the relative attraction of stock returns versus corporate bond returns. And Keynes very quickly picked up on this. He wrote about, although he didn't talk about the equity risk premium, it's clear from the way he described things that he realized that equities should deliver you this extra return, which would compensate you for the extra risk that investors would take on compared to bonds and cash. So that was the first thing, and he gave full expression to that belief in equities as being able to deliver that kind of risk premium in the way that he went about investing his portfolios. The other aspect of his investment approach is that within equities, he also tilted his portfolios towards the size factor and the value factor. And again, of course, he didn't employ this terminology, but fully two generations before Farmer and French ever talked about these things, his portfolios clearly had a size bias. He was more invested in small and mid-cap stocks than the market, and he equally had this tilt towards value stocks.
And that's interesting. And he was investing at a time that was really challenging. Did you see through the records that his investment approach changed over time, that perhaps he did things, learned lessons, and had to adjust?
So I think this was the one of the other interesting things that came out of the research that we did. It was known, Keynes himself, after the fact, wrote about his changing his investment approach. And we were able to actually relate this shift in his approach to what was going on in the portfolios to provide really conclusive proof that this was the case. His big change was that he started off life really as what we would call today a top-down macro manager. So he was trying to look at how to rotate between stocks, bonds, and cash, based on his view of what he called the trade cycle, or what we understand as a business cycle. In other guises, today we would call that market timing. And he was less than successful doing that. So it is certainly not the case that from start to finish, the story of Keynes the investor was one of unqualified success. For the first decade, he kind of matched the market, and for a period of 3 years in the late 20s, he actually was substantially behind the market. And just as importantly, his top-down market timing approach did not enable him to get out of the market ahead of the 1929 crash. So what we found is through the early 1930s, he starts to migrate to, again today, what we would call a bottom-up buy-and-hold kind of approach, where he was picking individual stocks that he really liked, again with this kind of value bias. So it was a fairly fundamental change, and from that point his performance, he started to perform better. He didn't try to time the market in 37-38 when both London and Wall Street took another tumble. He just sat in his stocks and in some cases added to his positions. And we see evidence of this in the way that he traded, and we can also see evidence in the fact that his overall portfolio turnover came down over time, which would be consistent with someone taking this more patient approach to picking stocks.
Now, an interesting point, and that's really the topic of the article, is to make a connection between Keynes and also his influence on modern investors such as David Swensen from Yale. What are the parallels that you see, and perhaps some of the lessons that Swensen has taken and other endowments can take from Keynes?
So David Swensen wrote a very influential book a few years ago. It was first published in the early 2000s. the latest edition, I think, was published in 2009. This is the one called Pioneering Portfolio Management. It's an excellent book. If you look through that book, it is sprinkled with references to Keynes and to Keynes's writings. David is reaching for these references when I think he is trying to emphasize a particular position he's taking with respect to his investment philosophy. So when he talks about long-term investment focus, when he talks about the need to have an equity bias, when he talks about the futility of market timing, the case for leaning towards value stocks, the case for being contrarian, and indeed the case for being bottom up in terms of the kind of managers that he thinks that endowments should look for. All these things are referenced, reference Keynes in the book. And therefore, you want to ask the question, well, where does this come from? So I think in part what we've managed to do with this research is to kind of join up those dots from David's view of the world to Keynes's own experience. The other thing that he draws attention to in the book, which I think is particularly worth emphasizing, and this applies to all endowments of different sizes, and that is the challenges that are presented by groups having to make decisions, so investment committees, and the challenges of governance structures. When David is talking about the importance of group decision making for endowments of all sizes, large and small, he quotes Keynes, where Keynes said that it is better for reputation to fail conventionally than to succeed unconventionally. And I think this is a very important point, and it is very difficult sometimes for investment officers and committees really to grasp the opportunity that's in front of them. And it takes a special setup and a special kind of organization have really thought about what their investment objective and mission is, and where all the important parties in the governance structure have bought into what that mission and objective is.
Now, Keynes was the epitome of active investor. If he could contribute to the active-passive debate at the moment, where do you think he would stand?
So I think Keynes, as the investor himself, would most certainly stand on the side of being an active investor. I think that he believed that he was an extremely self-confident individual, almost goes without saying, and I think he believed that he had the ability to suss out good information on investments and to be more often right than he was wrong. And so he most definitely believed that there was a role for active investment. On the other hand, he did recognize that there, for a lot of investors, that was not necessarily an easy thing to do. And so, for example, and I'm quoting him here, he said that the theory of scattering one's investments over as many fields as possible, i.e. diversification, or a passive approach, might be the wisest plan on the assumption of comprehensive ignorance. Very likely that would be the safer assumption to make. So not unlike actually David Swensen, who wrote two books, and his second book was not aimed at endowments, it was aimed at personal investors. That was the book that he wrote on personal investing, where his advice was, look, if you don't have any particular value-added information, you should really think about going passive. That should be your starting point. I think Keynes would totally agree with that. And the other point to make is that some of the moves that have been made recently in the professional investment management industry in terms of pushing active managers to be less closet indexers and taking on more active risk, and really to justify the active fees that they're charging. I think you would most certainly agree with that.
That's good. Well, thank you very much, David, for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure.
Copyright 2015 CFA Institute. This program is designed to give accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is distributed with the understanding that CFA Institute is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, investment, or other expert advice. If legal advice or other expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.